Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Glad you're with us. Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. The crew is all here. David Reed is the chairman of the board. John McClain will join us a little bit later. He'll be on at 1 o'clock this afternoon. John Feinstein today at 12:30. Blake Bedingfield, our scout, former Titan scout, also contributor and writer at PaulKuharski.com. He joins us in studio every Tuesday at 11 a.m. as we look into the film, scout the current team, look ahead to the upcoming opponents, and discuss things around the league. Blake, how are you?
I'm doing great.
I want to get your take on a big college football headline to start. Nick Bosa will not return to Ohio State. He's going to go ahead and prepare for the NFL draft, prepare for the NFL combine, and all the scouting that goes behind that. In the media, do we overrate players that skip bowl games and that do things that Bosa is currently doing, skipping the end of the season when he could return healthy in order to focus on his pro career?
I think there's a little bit overreaction to it, but when the NFL teams break it down, they're going to see how he fits for their team. Not only on the field, which is obvious, the talent's there, but how he fits on as a personality. You know, he is looking out for himself in this situation. Is the injury a little bit more severe than they're letting on, and it was going to linger into maybe the rest of the regular season, and maybe he would have just been healthy for the playoffs? I don't know. But when you're talking about a team that is going for a national championship and he doesn't want to be a part of it at this point, I think that's where I would question the player, and I question his dedication to the team. And is he going to be like that in a contract year in the NFL? Is he going to think, okay, I've got a nagging injury here, I don't want to go out and get hurt even more, my contract's coming up? Those are the things that would creep into my mind.
Can you get a definitive answer to that question, though? Or is it just a guess?
I think you have to get to know the person. You have to get to know his personality since he's been on campus there. Has he been an all-in guy, or has he been more about himself? He obviously has a brother, a father, a uncle that have all played in the NFL. There's a long lineage there with the family history.
And he's very good.
and his brother, you know, has been very good, too, and is dealing with an injury. But, you know, I think you got to deal with the personality and see what he's been like since he's been there.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us.
We're looking, obviously, it's only six games in. There's a lot of football to be played. Malcolm Butler hasn't been very good. Deion Lewis hasn't been very productive. Josh Klein's part of an interior that hasn't been very effective. Three guys that got pretty big free agent dollars, two from the outside, one from the inside. What's the feeling inside the building when you see three guys that were big ticket acquisitions or holdovers playing at that level?
You know, I think if you take them individually, you look at Klein, he didn't have a good day. But Klein is what he is. He's kind of an overachiever type. Athletically, he's a little smaller. He's similar to Ben Jones in that regard. Now you have two of them on the line. Usually out of your starting group, you want one. Now you have two. But, you know, Klein's a hardworking battler. When he competes in a game, he's competing for the entire game to win. This isn't something that comes easy like a Taylor Lewan or maybe even a Conklin, where the game can come easy at times and he can take a playoff. Klein can. So you're probably less disappointed in him, especially with the contract numbers that were given out. He could still be a solid to average starter for the team. When you're looking at Deion Lewis, you wanted a guy that can come in and be a change of pace back. Saw it a little bit early in the season with some of the receptions out of the backfield, especially when he got in space, but you've seen it less as the season has gone along. Has teams taken that away? Or in this game, in a lot of situations, he was asked to pass protect. With Malcolm Butler, that's the big one. This is a top 10 paid corner in the NFL, and even in this game, he was taken out of the base defense. Logan Ryan and Adoree Jackson were the two starting corners on the outside, and until they went to nickel, he didn't come back in. That's a very expensive nickel cover corner.
Blake, give us the full scouting report on Butler, and where are teams attacking him? What are they looking for?
You know, Malcolm has always been an aggressive player. Aggressive. He wants the ball in his hands. He's going to get physical with the receiver down the field. He's going to be an aggressive tackler. That's his mentality. That's the way he plays. He doesn't have a great skill set from an athletic standpoint. He's not a big, long corner. He doesn't have great makeup speed. What he is a competitor on the field, and he is a battler. He will battle receivers, and that's usually what happens with him. If the pass rush isn't there, which it wasn't in this game, you're going to get picked on. He was getting picked on by a bigger receiver in Michael Crabtree that has very good instincts to the ball in the air, has better height, better length and reach, and better hands. A lot of Malcolm's problems when you watch him on film is a lot of technical stuff. He is his back pedal is poor at the line of scrimmage. If he gets a good jam, he gets beat around. He's not strong enough with his press and jam. When he's playing off, he loses that. He gives up too much cushion to the receiver, and the receiver gets separation. And I think probably his biggest thing is his eyes are bad right now. He's peeking at the quarterback. Even on that touchdown pass, that was an easy touchdown pass. I thought he was lazy getting into his spot. The receiver did not run a complicated route on that. He basically just ran a little quick little hitch and looked for the ball, and he was there, and Butler was staring at the quarterback.
Has he been known to do that, or is this something you're just noticing?
No, he's been known to do that. That's his thing. He's a little bit of a gambler. I say competitor.
But with the eyes, I'm saying.
Yeah, he's always had, or not always had, but, you know, he has a tendency to have bad eyes at times and peek at the quarterback. He's looking for a play, and that's what you get when you get a player like that. He wants the ball in his hands, and that's that gambling mentality that comes along with it. But the problem is when he gets in those situations, he doesn't have that height and doesn't have that length and doesn't have the great makeup speed to recover when he gets himself in a bad situation.
What adjustments should they have made? I mean, it seems to me that the malarkey change was over stubbornness and an unwillingness to adjust. This staff was sold as a staff that was going to adjust game to game and series to series, certainly half to half, and we've seen that at times. In this game, it seemed like they were just waiting for the blocking to get better. And it never got better. What didn't they do? What should they have done?
You know, what I didn't know, what you saw in a lot of the routes by the Titan receivers were deep routes. Now, whether it was a 3rd and 14 or a 3rd and 12, they were running 14 and 12 and 13 yards downfield. Okay, you got to get the first down. But there was no underneath route. There was no 8-yard route, 9-yard route to a Deion Lewis or a Taywan Taylor and hoping he picks up the next five. If you watch any NFL game across the league on television on Sunday, you'll see a 3rd and 14, and you'll see the quarterback make a pass at 6 or 7 yards, and you hope to get that. If not, you punt, and you're playing field position. In this situation, you didn't see a lot of the underneath receivers. If you look at Paul's article on some of the screenshots you took, especially from behind the offense, you don't see a receiver in that screenshot. And that's what Marcus sees. So Marcus wasn't seeing a receiver come open, and he didn't see anything underneath. There was the one play that he could have dumped it off to Deion Lewis, but Marcus kind of ran and escaped to his right and ended up going out of bounds or for the sack. But, you know, those are things that they should have helped him with, was have a receiver underneath, have a crossing pattern, run different patterns for the receivers. But the receivers were getting locked up all day too. Now they're running a lot of zone coverage, and then once they cross the defensive back's face, they were locking up in man, and that's what the quarterback was seeing.
Why do you think they didn't adjust to some underneath?
That's a hard thing to explain. I mean, I remember vividly the New England game, the 59-0 New England game, and I remember our game plan going into that, and on an icy, snowy field was a lot of deep comeback routes, and that just wasn't going to work in that surface, in that environment. New England in that game was running a lot of crossing patterns, which is hard for the DB to get their footing in that icy, snowy conditions, and we struggled to cover their receivers, hence the 59-0 score.
How about the blocking? Like, is a snowball effect? Everybody took a turn. When I kind of pressed Vrabel to talk about what specifically was going wrong, he said they really try to play inside out. A lot of the problems started inside. Certainly Luan didn't have a good game. Conklin was involved too. But what was your sense of inside versus outside?
You know, you saw a lot of 6 and 7 man protection. They were leaving a tight end or leaving the running back in. A lot of times it was Deion Lewis to pass protect. I remember the strip the fumble, that initially he went through Quentin Spain's gap, but Quentin passed him off to Deion Lewis. Deion Lewis didn't pick him up. Deion Lewis slid over to the center. He came free, knocked the ball free. Quentin, you could see even on tape, Quentin kind of went to Deion and explained to him what he was supposed to do. If you look at what Quentin did on that play, the tackle, Taylor Lewan, passed his man off to Quentin, and Quentin took him. And that's what was supposed to happen in that pass protection. Deion just failed to pick up Quentin's man.
More so, inside than outside? Or,
I thought a lot of it was inside, but you saw Taylor get beat on the outside a number of times. You saw Conklin kind of get fooled into a drop by the defensive end, and then a late delayed rush.
Great play, right? Judon dropped back. Conklin went to danger. Judon came on. Marcus stepped up in the trouble. I mean, that to me was just a fantastic pass rush play. I'm not upset about.
They had a lot of really good delayed rushes. They had a safety, number 40, Young, that was spying Marcus. And anytime Marcus started to move in the pocket, Young came on a blitz, a delayed blitz. He didn't blitz initially. He was the spy waiting for Marcus to sneak out of the hole. And what you had in a couple of those situations where the defensive end dropped, rushed, and then he forced Marcus in, and now the spy came and got him.
104.5 The Zone. Nashville's home for the Vols. Tennessee and Alabama. Coverage starts with the Tennessee Tailgate Show. Saturday at noon on 104.5 The Zone.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. It is the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's.
So, Blake, you look at that offensive line performance on Sunday, and it's easy to just look at the stats and say 11 sacks, everyone was bad. When you go back and watch the film, though, of those guys individually, did anyone stand out for maybe being just okay or a little bit better than the rest of the group?
I think, you know, Jack Conklin did not stand out as someone who was just beat repeatedly. And he did not have a horrible day. I think there were some things that he missed where he was trying to help out the guard next to him, where Klein was having a bad day. And you know, he was having a rough day with Za'Darius Smith. And Jack was over-helping him a little bit. And that's part one of the Judon pressure that he got that ended up in a sack.
Is there, when you look at Taylor Lewan struggling in a game like that, and we've seen him, when he struggles, it seems he really struggles over the course of a game, and then you don't hear from him for 4 or 5 weeks because he's been pretty good for those 4 or 5 weeks. Is there a certain style you've seen that he goes against when he's trying to block someone that he really gives him trouble?
No, I think the ones that Taylor can make things really look easy. He's got great feet. He's got great size. He's strong enough, but the athleticism is elite. So he can make it look easy on the edge, especially in pass protection. But one of the issues I saw was on that screen pass where he held the corner. That's an easy block for him. He covers up, he engulfs the corner and puts him down. But he ended up really putting him in almost in a headlock and bringing him down. Got a holding call, which brought it back. And, you know, those are the things that are easy for him to do. Was that a foot issue? Was he not able to push off and get that and be in balance when he was in space right there? That could have been an issue with him. I don't think he really struggles with speed or power. He can handle anybody in the league.
Random question for you. Rishard Matthews, according to Adam Schefter, is working out for the Jets today. If you go into a workout as a scout with a veteran coming in for a workout, how many routes do you actually need to see him run before you say, okay, enough, let's go back to the office?
I think you're going to see enough to get him in shape. Is he running 15, 20 routes to see what kind of wind he has? Is he in condition? Is he going to come in once we sign him and pull something? You know, those are the things you're concerned
with. That's all you need to know, really.
That's really what it comes down to. You know, probably if they have a practice squad quarterback or their backup quarterback, very seriously doubt Sam Darnold's going to throw to him.
Blake, going back to the offensive line, who's the player that must improve and elevate his play overall from the first month and a half of the season if the Titans truly want to get where they're going offensively? Is there one player that's critical to everything that's just not carrying their weight right now?
You know, I think offensively, if you just took the offensive side of the ball, it's going to have to be the running game. And that's a combination of Henry and Lewis. They're going to have to be better. And what I mean, they have to be better, that's all encompassing with the offensive line and the passing game. Everything works together. But But to run the football, to have the threat of a play action, and then to be able to throw the ball downfield, it all has to start with the running game with them. You saw a couple of times in this Ravens game, they did a great job of taking away Marcus's read option play. They sent Terrell Suggs unblocked right at Marcus when they tried that a couple of times. If Marcus would have held the ball, Terrell Suggs would have had a big hit for a tackle for loss. So they actually had someone that was going to take that away from him, and Marcus had to hand it off.
One thing interesting that Blake pointed out in what he wrote for my site, there of these 11 sacks, I don't think there was one of them where it was only one guy. There were two guys on Marcus at the end of every one of these plays, which really says something about how effective they were at getting to him.
Even when the Titans had 6 and 7 man protection, you would have 4 to 5 rushers and two were getting free to the quarterback. There was a breakdown in communication. There was a breakdown in what they were doing. And especially with that back end of the pass protection, what I mean is the tight end and the running back. There was one occasion where the tight end and the running back went to the same hole. Something was not the communication was not good there.
What goes on in the building after a game like that? I mean, I know they're not panicking, but do they say, holy crap, the communication is off, we're going back to basics? Or is it more common to say, all right, it's not as bad as it looked. Here are the three things that we've messed up, and if we get these straight, we'll be fine.
This is a situation where you got to go to the quarterback and say, what did you see? You know, what did you feel? Do we need shorter routes? Do we need one, whether it's a running back in the flat or a tight end in the middle of the field? You know, this is where you're really missing Delanie Walker here. He would have played that middle of the field role and really been active, where they, right now they're still not trusting Jonnu Smith. Firkser made two really nice catches, but got locked up and pressed at the line of scrimmage and couldn't get in his route on a number of them. So, you know, that was a struggle too, but they're going to go to the quarterback and ask, what can we help you with? Do you need that screen game? Do you need shorter passes? Do we run more slants? Do we run more crossers? You know, those type of things. Safe passes to get the ball downfield. Loosen up that blitz. You know, they were showing 7 at the line of scrimmage. That is an easy behind the linebackers in front of the safety's throw that I didn't see all game.
Paul mentioned, you know, they likely don't go back to the facility and panic, hit the panic button. But I do know that there are conversations every year with every single team when the bye week approaches about, okay, if we're going to make a change somewhere, now's the time to make that swap. Do you think that with 1 week before the bye, that is there a player or two that you feel like gets one more week of evaluation before making a depth chart change? Is there a player that qualifies here or not? There may not be.
I don't really see a starter in the starting 22 that would come off the field. I don't see the person behind those starters pushing them. And that's part of the depth issue that you're coming into. There's not those players that are really going to push. You're not going to take even a Rakpo who's not been very productive. You're not going to take an Rakpo, a leader on the team, a captain on the team, take him off the field for a Correa and try to give him more snaps. They are trying to give Landry more snaps. You can see that. But you're not going to take a veteran off the field.
What have you not seen from Rakpo that we saw in recent years?
One of the things Brian's always had is a really good get off of the snap and get into his pass rush quick. And he's just not doing that. You don't see the explosion in the legs. You don't see the pop in the hands. He's always had a great, what you call a little 6-inch punch of the offensive lineman, getting him off, getting separation so he can work his pass rush moves. Brian can work the outside. He can work the inside. He can power rush. But you're not seeing that pop and explosion right now. I'm not sure what, if he's dealing with any injuries, whether it's upper body, lower body, but I don't see that. As you get older, as he's gotten older, you see less speed around the edge, but that's where that savvy pass rush. I mean, Terrell Suggs is what, 35, 36 years old, and he's still working his pass rush moves, but it doesn't necessarily have to come around the edge with speed all the time.
Paul, was it a shoulder that he missed most of camp with, Rakpo, when he banged shoulders with Stocker?
Early on.
Okay.
And that's now, where you see a lack of the punch trying to get off blocks.
And now Morgan's out. I mean, it's one thing to give up 11 sacks. It's another thing to hit Joe Flacco, a statue, once with a defensive back. What's going on with the pass rush there?
You know, in this game, it usually comes from the interior where Jarrell Casey really, you know, getting penetration, forcing things from the outside where Landry can clean up something, or Landry coming around the edge. You know, you just haven't seen that this year. You've seen Morgan Rush inside and out, but really to no production. Again, we talked about Arakpo. You know, Correa's had a couple of kind of easy sacks. Landry's been the one guy that has been able to put some outside pressure, and really all you have inside is Jarrell Casey. If they take away Jarrell, you don't have another interior pass rusher. That was a problem coming into the season. We talked about it in training camp, and they don't have another interior pass rush. And, you know, whether it's they try to manipulate that by putting Derek Morgan inside, but right now they're not going to have him for the next few weeks.
What do you think they think of Amari Cooper? And would Amari Cooper be worth going and getting, and what would he be worth?
You know, he would be worth it from the standpoint of you're adding a guy that it's going to take a few weeks. Even if they traded for Amari today, he's going to be even slow coming in after the bye week. From a mental standpoint, learning the offense, fitting in, what role is he going to play? Is he an outside receiver? Okay, if he's an outside receiver, who's going inside? Well, Taywan Taylor's now an outside receiver, and they don't put him in the slot much. Corey Davis, you can take him from being an outside guy, move him in the slot. You know, how does he fit within the puzzle that they want to have there? You know, his salary's big, and his salary's going to be real big next year with the, you know, he's fourth-year player this year. He'll be a fifth-year rookie option, and that's probably $13, $14 million. So that's a very expensive player, and now you have to give up another draft choice. You already gave up one for Correa. Now you're going to have to give up one for him. Whether it's a fourth, a third, or a fifth, doesn't matter. You're still depleting your draft choices, which they did this year, and the lack of depth shows. So, you know, I think Amari is a player that could come in and have an impact for the team later in the year. Halfway through and later in the year, he could have an impact if he's healthy. Amari has had some injuries the last few years. And is he healthy? Is he wanting to come in? Does a change of scenery help him? You know, I think probably the guy in the building that's going to know the most is the current receiver coach who had him last year.
You think he's had some drops issues. I mean, people in town, and you know how fans work, think, you know, oh, there's a name I know who starred in the SEC, who's had some NFL success. He will fix everything. I mean, I don't know that there's anybody that comes in and fixes everything outside of Rodgers or Brady.
Probably. He's also been better than any Titans receiver currently on the roster. Sure. We've seen that.
Do you make a deal? Do you give up a third for him?
You know, my thing is long-term. I look at it and see, okay, I'm going to get a half season out of him, and then I'm going to pay him $13 million or have to sign him to a long-term contract. I think a third's pretty steep for an Amari Cooper, who has, right now he's injured with a concussion, but you know, there could be some other things. I think that's pretty steep. But if you're going to make a run, they're first in the division. They cannot continue on with just the group they have. If they have an injury there, they're in real trouble. So there's got to be some depth from somewhere at the wide receiver position. I think a third is pretty steep, but I think they're going to have a hard time getting a third-round pick for him.
Would you do a fourth?
I think a fourth is something you'd have to consider. I'm more of an all-in type of guy. I worry about right now. I'm trying to compete right now. Can't worry about next year. And that doesn't mean you give up a first or a second round pick, but I would be more of an all-in. A fourth round pick, you're talking about a fourth round pick in most NFL drafts. You're talking about a backup, two deep type player that's playing special teams. Would I give him a fourth round pick for Amari Cooper? Yes.
104.5 The Zone is your home for Titans football. Titans football. And you're home for Titans Ticket Tuesday.
Sponsored by Coca-Cola.
Tune in for chances to win during the Wake Up Zone, Midday 180, and 3HL. You could be at Nissan Stadium this fall thanks to Coca-Cola. Titans Ticket Tuesday. From the official station of the Titans, 104.5 The Zone.
Day 180 served up by Wendy's. Wendy's, they have the 4 for $4 menu currently. It delivers the right meal at the right time. You can choose between 8 different entree options and get 4 nuggets, small fries, and a drink for just $4. Available at participating Wendy's. Blake Bedingfield is in studio with us. Titans and Chargers this Sunday from London. You a fan of the London series, the games, and everything played over there?
No, I'm not. You know, I think the game should be played over here. I think it's just a different game, especially in the morning, and puts a lot on the teams and the personnel to go over there, and especially from the West Coast. You know, you look at the Chargers are staying, I think, in Cleveland, and they're going to be away for over a week. That's tough.
Six blowouts in a row, also six or eight.
Then are you also against the team possibly being calling London home at some point?
I am. I think from a business perspective, I think it's going to be very tough. It's going to be tough to ever acquire players in free agency. Good luck getting a player that grew up in California, Florida, and then now he's going to make his home in London unless you overpay him. I mean, that's what you're going to end up doing in those situations. You're going to end up overpaying.
Or you have a home base here and he's commuting to home games. And then if you're in this division, I think they have to sweeten the pot. If it's the Jags, then the Colts and the Titans and the Texans have a big road trip every year. I think you got to give them something in return.
Well, I think you do. And are they going to alter things financially? You know, I just think there's so many hurdles to overcome. And I think from a player's perspective, you're going to maybe see players in the draft that refuse to go to those teams and say, I want to be traded, Eli Manning, whatever, you know, those type of things.
Blake, when I say Ken Wisenhunt, what comes to mind first?
You know, Ken was, he had an idea. He knew what he wanted. I think that was pretty evident day one. I was the director at that time. And, you know, it was pretty evident day one that what type of player he wanted in his offense. That was what he was really interested in. That's was kind of his thing. But
describe that. Like,
you know, from a quarterback perspective, he loved the downfield passing. He wanted a vertical passing game. But probably more important, he wanted smart players all around. He wanted a running back, and he wanted multiple running backs that could stay on the field in first, second, and third down, never come off. But he didn't just want one running back. He wanted three, just like that, with all the same skill set. You know, at that time, we signed Dexter McCluster, who was when he was in Kansas City, was more of a slot wide receiver. Well, that was perfect for his offense. He wanted passing out of the backfield. So we drafted a Bishop Sankey, who was a good runner in college, but also a good receiver out of the backfield, someone that didn't have to come off the field. A Leon Washington, you know, we had a Sean Green at the time, which really didn't fit at all.
Antonio Andrews,
even though he was a bigger back, did have really good hands and instincts. Antonio's problem was more of just keeping up with the conditioning part of the game and that type of thing, staying on the field. But, you know, he was an undrafted guy that we signed out of Western Kentucky that had a nice short career. But, you know,
Wiz
knew what he wanted. You know, there were some guys at the end of their career when he came in, whether it was Michael Roos, and we ended up drafting Taylor Lewan in that draft. And Taylor played right tackle his first year, but, you know, signed Delanie Walker. You know, those were type players that he wanted. Probably didn't have the receivers at that point, whether it was Justin Hunter, group like that, that just really wasn't up to par with what he was looking for.
So a typical meeting for a play caller, is that how you would describe it? Like, or was this, okay, he's in charge?
No, not at all. Rustin was in charge of personnel. Rustin Webster had.
That's what I assumed, but I wanted to ask because I figured fans are asking that same question.
But Rustin worked with Wiz when he came in. And you know, the best thing a general manager can do is, if you were hiring this head coach, whether it was, you know, Rustin hiring him or Tony Smith hiring him or whoever hired him at the time, is to give him what he needs and to be successful. You want the team to be successful, so you want the head coach to have the players that he needs to have success and win ball games. Doesn't matter if you wanted him or not. And I think that's important, and Rustin was very good at working with him on that.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us.
You talked about Ken Wisenhunt being a guy who knew what he wanted. He had an idea of what he wanted in players and scheme and everything else. Was it your experience in being a scout that it was easier to work for guys who you knew exactly what they wanted, or was it easier to just go about assessing players and kind of having a blank canvas for a coach and what they were looking for?
I liked working for coaches that had an idea of what they wanted at each position. You know, from a scout's perspective, you want to know these are the type of running backs we're looking for. Probably the coaches that I really didn't like listening to were ones that said, just give me, you know, whatever and I'll make it work. That really doesn't ever work either. So, you know, I want a guy that has a plan, whether it's a receiver, a tight end, what the offensive line looks like. And that's why those meetings were so important, is to be able to identify exactly what they wanted from a personnel perspective.
Perception, though, is their quality that they wanted was versatility. We heard that as a buzzword, a keyword, if you will, for players they wanted. Is that fair? And is that difficult to find?
I think that is fair. That's exactly what they wanted. That's why the Delaney Walkers were there. That's why the Dexter McClusters, the Bishop Sankeys, the those type of guys were there. They did have that versatility to be a receiver out of the backfield, be a blocker, be a runner at times. So, yeah, I think that's very fair. And I think it's hard to find multiple of those players. You know, if you have a – if you sign a McCluster and you draft a Sankey, it's going to be hard to find that third player. He wanted three running backs. So you had to go and get a player that's a little bit lesser talent at that time, a little bit older than Leon Washington and come off some injuries. But he had a skill set that kind of fit, and he was that third back.
Talk Tennessee football with Doug Matthews. This Sunday at a special time, Big Orange Sunday. Sunday afternoon at 2 on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's.
John Feinstein joins us today at 12:30. John McClain at 1 o'clock right now. Blake Bedingfield is in studio with us. 19 years as a Titan scout. You can read his work in previews and game reviews at paulkoharski.com. Blake, the rumors about trading for Phillip Rivers, were they true?
You know, the rumors were true. I mean, it wasn't that the teams were in constant communication, okay? You know, I think it was more from the Chargers side first. Can they sign Rivers? Is Rivers going to be happy? Is this the time to dump him? Because if he's not happy, he doesn't want to move to L.A., then we've got to find an option, you know. And is the option a team with one of the two top picks? So, you know, Chargers, I think, went through the process with both quarterbacks, just like most teams, interviewed them, which you're going to do with most players anyway. But I think the rumors of it and what actually was going on were probably two different things.
But there were some level of conversation?
You know, there was a level of conversation about it. But, you know, and the obvious thing was when Wiz came into town, he coached Phillip,
right?
The connection there.
He's from Alabama.
One of the things you can't do is you can't communicate with a player. So, and when you can't communicate with the player, you're not really sure what his interests are. Is he putting this rumor out? Is his agent putting this rumor out to really drive up the price and put the Chargers, you know, on the hot seat, so to speak, and get a contract done?
Did you have a sense of what the price range being discussed was?
No, I don't know. I don't think it ever really got to that point, because this was something, you know, I was spending a lot of time as director with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, and I wanted to see if my time was futile there, but or it could be spent better somewhere else. But I was spending a lot of time on those two guys. So, you know, it was something that, no, keep going with the same process where, you know, we're going to go work out Marcus, we're going to work out Jameis, and that kind of was put to rest.
And, Paul, this was 2015. This was the spring of 2015 when we were discussing this. And the thought was then, okay, do you trade for Rivers? Do you sign him to a contract and then reevaluate where you are 3 to 4 years down the road? That would be right now, hypothetically. And he's still playing very well. He is ripping that ball down the field. When I watched the Chargers game earlier, I was in the booth getting ready for the late afternoon kickoff with the Titans and Ravens. He was on TV playing against the Browns, and he looked very good.
He does. I mean, you know, some of those quarterbacks just, they age very well, whether it's Drew Brees or Rivers or Brady. You know, they seem to almost get a second wind in their career, whether it's new players added to their team that help them out, or, you know, in the Saints, you've got Alvin Kamara and you've got Michael Thomas. You've got some new blood in there. And with the Chargers, he's got a nice group of offensive talent, whether it's Melvin Gordon or Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. You know, so those things always help rejuvenate a quarterback. But Rivers is playing very good. You know, he's always been a pocket passer. You get him outside of the pocket, he's less efficient, less effective. He doesn't have great feet, but that goes along with Manning and Brady and all those guys. But, you know, what he really is 20 yards and in, he can pick you apart with really good precision. And he has the type of offensive skill set around him to do that. And they've done a good job of putting those players around him, whether it's Melvin Gordon as a runner and receiver, Antonio Gates more in his prime, but you got Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and Tyrell Williams, who are all good. They're big, tall, long receivers with good hands that run good routes.
What have they been doing defensively, minus a guy who's their centerpiece in Bosa?
You know, I look at that team and I say, you know, you can run against them. But most teams haven't run against them. The only team that really ran against them were the Rams, but they had the lead and a combination of a great passing attack and a great running attack with Gurley. So, you know, if that's your model, that's great, but you got to have the personnel to go along with it. But, you know, you look at them up front, they're not very big. They've got a small interior defensive line and Philbin.
Titans haven't seen that. They're probably saying, finally,
yes. They're tough. They're 6 foot, 310-pound little bowling balls that you got to move out of their spot. But, you know, you're not talking about great pass rushers on the interior, especially without Bosa. And you're not talking about a big, stout run defense like you saw last week versus the Ravens. So, you know, the linebackers are also not that big physical group either. So they've got a couple of injuries there. So this is the time, if you're ever going to run against a team and establish something, this is the time to do that against the Chargers. You know, most teams have tried to attack them with the pass. If you look at the personnel, they don't have great personnel on the back end. Jason Verrett, their best corner, was out before the year started. So those are things. Casey Haywood's still a good cover corner, but you know they don't have the personnel to really challenge. So this is the time to get your offense on track. But now it has to be on track because you're going to have to outscore the team.
Is this more of a Derrick Henry or Deion Lewis type matchup with that front for the Chargers?
You know, I think it could be a combination of both, and I don't say that every week, but I think this can be a combination. I think if you're hitting in between the tackles, this is more of a Derrick Henry. But you know, this is where Deion has to become better on the outside. If your receivers are having a little bit of success on the outside, it opens up things as an outside run or an outside flats to screen passes with Deion Lewis. The linebackers, Daniel Perryman, their inside backer, is not a great cover linebacker. The rookie is kind of an undersized undersized linebacker, but an oversized safety out of West Virginia. And, you know, you look, some of those players are just not great in coverage. So this is the time to take advantage of that. So I think a combination of the two in the running game with Derek and Deion Moore on the edge and in the screen game.
The Vols take on the Crimson Tide this week, Blake. Let's talk a little Alabama football. And let's start at quarterback with Tua Tagovailoa. When you watch him play, what are the qualities that you automatically think can translate to the NFL? I know he's young, but I know you look at the game that way.
Quick release, accuracy. He's got great instincts. This guy's got really good vision of the field, what pass coverages look like. You know, you see him immediately go off his main receiver and go to his second route. He's really good at a young age of looking off a safety and getting to his one-on-one coverage versus his speed receivers. You know, he just has a knack. He's got a knack in the pocket of moving when the pass rush comes from his backside. He easily moves and feels that pass rush without looking at it. His eyes are always downfield. He's not a run first guy, but actually has the ability to run and get yardage there. But he's got an easy delivery, real quick release, and he's extremely accurate.
You can pick any number of them, but I'm really impressed with Alabama's receivers. The speed that he has there, the skill, you can look at any part of Alabama's team and see things that you like for the next level, but what about the receiver position?
You know, Jerry Jeudy, they're all sophomores, but he's got a great ability of running underneath the catch, and he can really track the ball deep. He's got great speed to get separation. He gets it easily, gets it right off the line of scrimmage, and he can really run away. And he's probably not the fastest of the three. He's probably the third fastest, even though he's probably a low 4.4, high 4.3 guy. So Devontae Smith has just got extreme vertical speed. And again, another guy that can really track the deep ball. Tua throws a great deep ball where he leaves it up and lets them run underneath it. You know, you look at Ruggs, the other speed back, he's probably the fastest of the three. And he's really good short, taking balls and running away from defenders. But, you know, of those three, I think Jerry Judy's probably the more complete, the more refined as a route runner, hand catcher. He's really good on the sidelines and really good downfield. You know, those three are really good, and they're going to be special for another year.
Tennessee's top three receivers came to play this past weekend, and it seems like Tennessee, I don't know that they can rely on just throwing it deep and catching that many every game, but that's what those guys excel at. They don't seem to be the fastest, but they really high point the ball well. What do you think about those top three receivers for Tennessee?
You know, I think in this game you're going to have to throw the ball. You're not going to try to pound it in there with that offense, young offensive line, and the young running backs. I think the quarterback has really been good for those receivers. You know, Juwan Jennings is probably has a good instincts for the game. I think he's got really good hands. He's physical. he's the type of athlete that's not afraid to match up with better athletes too. And I like that group as youth. Not he's not the young guy, but as growing with the quarterback. But I think where they've really improved is really with the quarterback play. He seems to be more determined and efficient with the ball, especially was against Auburn. And as he's grown, and you want to see that this week. Now, they're going to need a hint of a run game. They're going to need to shorten this game and not make it a long game and have three and outs. You can't just go out and throw every down and get three and outs. So some of the passes need to be short, have the clock moving. You need to shorten the game and not put the ball into his hands too often.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. It's always a fast-paced hour. We'll learn a lot. Learn a lot as we break down the film and look ahead to the upcoming matchup. Blake, thank you as always. Always enjoy this.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.